This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, I'm going to be talking about the new films The Revenant, The Forest, The Masked Saint, and Diablo. Also, I will be giving you a look at my top anticipated films of 2016. I'll also talk about the news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news is more of a reminder of anything. I vote in the Critics' Choice Movie Awards, and that takes place next week for the ceremony. So don't forget to watch this on Sunday night, the 21st annual Critics' Choice Movie Awards. It'll be aired on A&E, Lifetime, and Lifetime Movie Network on Sunday, January 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That's going to be following red carpet coverage on A&E at 7 o'clock, 4 p.m. Pacific. Now let's move on to some of the other pieces of news. The big new Star Wars news is that Star Wars: The Force Awakens has become the all-time highest domestic grossing release ever. And that means it topped Avatar. Going into this weekend, it was on this pedestal. I'm going to deal with the inflation thing here in a minute. This is pretty amazing simply because it only took Star Wars like 20 days to get there. Whereas in 20 days, Avatar was doing great with $370 million, but it still wasn't at the $750 million that it had topped things. Right now, we're getting in this first week of school, we're having finally grosses. For the first time, you're getting daily grosses less than $10 million for Star Wars. And the next highest one is like $1.5 million, while Star Wars is $6, $7, $8 million a day. Now, a lot of people say, oh, adjusted for inflation is something different. Well, there's a lot of things you got to remember when you deal with the adjusted for inflation. You're not just adjusting for inflation, you're adjusting for the business and how it's changed. Gone with the Wind has that top spot, and it's probably never going to get knocked down off of it. If you adjust Gone with the Wind for inflation, it's like $1.7 billion. But you got to realize that back in 1939, when that came out, Gone with the Wind just stayed in theaters for years because there was no home video. There was no streaming market. There wasn't even TV back then. So your only chance to see Gone with the Wind was in the theaters. They had a lock on that. Even the original Star Wars, which has a $1.5 billion adjusted gross, back in 1977, yeah, they had television, but television was 19 inches across. Television was very, very tiny back then. Even the biggest TV is dwarfed by your average $200 buy at Walmart now. It was a very different market. I don't even think Star Wars made it to television until the mid-80s. Star Wars: The Force Awakens is probably going to be somewhere between $900 million and $1 billion in its release. There are only four movies in the history of time that have done that on a single release. And that's The Sound of Music, Ten Commandments, Jaws, and Dr. Zhivago. And even then, with Dr. Zhivago, it's going to be nipping on its heels because adjusted, Dr. Zhivago is about $1 billion just above. The reason that's significant is because movies like Gone with the Wind and even the original Star Wars and E.T. and Titanic, these all had re-releases. These had multiple chances to make this money. Star Wars: The Force Awakens has made this all in one fell swoop. And yeah, you've got IMAX tickets and 3D bumps. But the thing with those is people are still spending the money to go see those. You can't just release any movie in IMAX. Now, people aren't going to pay that premium for it. The bottom line is Star Wars is impressive no matter how you cut its box office. Now, one more piece of news, and it's not Star Wars, it's Star Trek. There was a fan film out there, and it raised over $1 million in crowdfunding. And nobody outside of sort of Star Trek fandom knew this was going on. And Paramount stepped in and filed an injunction and is essentially suing the production. They're claiming breach of copyright. They're using trademarked information. They're using trademarked characters. Now, people on the internet are losing their minds saying, oh, they're mean to them. They should just let them make the movie. And the most ridiculous case I've heard of people complaining is saying that Paramount's terrified because Star Trek Beyond's going to be so bad, they don't want a good, quotes, Star Trek movie coming out. And that's not it. Here's the thing. When it comes to fan films, Paramount has always been kind of hands-off. They'd be like, do whatever you want to. If you're a bunch of people and you're shooting something in your garage with a video camera, I don't care. They would spend all of their time tracking those people down and filing injunctions, and it helps the fandom. The difference is $1 million. This is $1 million. Do you know how hard it is to get $1 million for any film? I mean, there's always these stories of these Kickstarter campaigns to bring back movies, you know, like Veronica Mars raised like $6 million. But that was Veronica Mars. And that was the people who ran Veronica Mars doing it. And then the fans are complaining because they're saying, oh, well, they're, no one's getting paid. The heck, people aren't getting paid. If there's $1 million being thrown around, people are certainly getting paid. There are actual actors like Tony Todd, Richard Hatch, Kate Vernon. They have gravitas in the fan base. Tony Todd's Candyman. Kate Vernon was in Battlestar Galactica, the reboot. Richard Hatch touches anything that has Battlestar Galactica on it. These people aren't working for free. They might be working for scale, but if you've got $1 million production, these people are taking home $1,000 a day. And yeah, that's nothing compared to what a $40, $50 million paycheck that Robert Downey Jr. gets for an Avenger movie, but this is an honest-to-God full-fledged movie. It's a major budget. It's a professional budget. You're making a movie at that point. You're not just doing it on weekends for fun in your garage. Paramount has every right to step in and say, okay, this is getting too big. This is a budget that they would have given one of their TV shows for an episode. Just because you can raise it doesn't mean you can't just use other people's knowledge. Like if Star Wars came out, people make Star Wars fan films all the time. But if somebody raised $1 million and wanted to show it. And the other thing is, and this is the catch with crowdfunding, a lot of times what's built into the donation process is getting a copy of the movie. Well, that counts as distribution. You're basically asking people to pre-buy DVDs. That's essentially how these crowdfunding things work. And you get other perks to it and you become, quote, a producer. But you're essentially saying, here's my $25, send me a DVD when it's done. That's distribution. You're not allowed to distribute these things. And if they leak on YouTube or Vimeo, that's one thing. But I mean, this is a major undertaking. So it sounds like it'd be a neat movie, but you've gone outside of the bounds. You know, it'd be like if you were doing a Pee Wee football league and you're going to call yourselves the New York Jets and you have Jets logos and that sort of thing. I don't really care if you're playing on a local football field. But if you get $1 million TV contract, you better believe the NFL is going to step in. Last piece of news is Michael Bay has come out and said he's going to be directing Transformer 5 for a 2017 release. You know, just give somebody else a chance. The biggest problem with these Transformers movies is there is no new ground for Michael Bay to mine. And yeah, they make money and they do well overseas. But, you know, step away at some point. It gets pathetic where all you've done aside from Transformers movies is this Benghazi movies that's coming out later this month. And Pain and Gain. And that's all you've done for 10 years. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the trailer park. I'm just going to cover one movie this week, and that is Zootopia. Opens on March 4th. There's been a bunch of trailers for this, and I just really haven't commented on it, and I just haven't had time. Let's take a look at one of them.
I need you to run a plate.
All right, I know a guy. You need something done, he's on it.
They're all sloths? We are in a really big hurry.
I am on
it?
Break.
I have 36 hours left. We can only solve it together.
It's not about how badly you want something. It's about what you are capable of.
I am a real cop.
First of all, this features the sloth. And the sloth has probably one of the funniest ads out there. I just can't play it on the radio because it takes too long. Because they're sloths. But Zootopia looks really cute and clever. And what's interesting about it is the movies that Disney has been putting out is these big, huge animated films that have been outside of the Pixar universe, stuff like Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen and Big Hero 6. Those have all been coming out in November. This one's coming out in March. One of the things you're seeing this year is you're seeing a seeding of bigger movies in the earlier months. And that's cool because now we don't just have to wait for summer and the holidays to get the big movies. You're going to be getting some pretty big movies in March and February and April, and early September is probably still going to be terrible, but still. Well, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Forest and The Masked Saint. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the movie reviews. Let's talk about the new movies, the brand new movies for this week. First week of January, which tends to be a bad time for movies. Now, you get the remnants of award season. You get some really good movies that are rolling out from limited release into wider release. But right now, the new releases, the brand new releases, this is like when Leprechaun first came out. The original Leprechaun came out in January, not in March when it should have. And it is also not uncommon for them to release horror movies at this time. For some reason, horror movies do extremely well in January. They, in fact, do better in January sometimes than October, partly because nowadays there are so many options to do things in October when you'd expect horror movies to be released. Halloween parties and movie marathons and conventions and other events just getting very, very busy in October. January tends to be a slow time and everybody's in school and decides to go back and sort of have some fun in the movie houses. That's where movies like The Devil Inside, which is one of the worst movies ever made, can make a ridiculous amount of money on its opening weekend. Well, this week, the movie that is being released as a horror movie is The Forest. Fortunately, it's not a found footage movie. That's like the best thing I can really say about it. I'm just glad it's not found footage, because at this time of year, you usually get a found footage movie. But in The Forest, a woman travels to a haunted Japanese forest to find her twin sister, who has disappeared.
Your sister went into Aokigahara Forest. It's where lost people go to commit suicide.
I'm looking for my sister. She went into the forest. I want to hire a guide.
No guide. Forest is very dangerous.
Oh my God, that's her tent.
Yes!
You cannot stay after dark.
I'm not leaving without my sister.
At night, people see bad things.
This is apparently a real forest, and it's kind of sad because the movie itself's really not that well done. And it's such a great concept and a great set idea for a movie that is just so fiercely mediocre. Reminds me a bit of the first Silent Hill. You remember that movie? No, of course you don't. Nobody does. It was a nothing movie. But it has a great premise. It's like a lot of horror movies that are based on video games have these really neat ideas, but really bad stories. And that's what you get with The Forest. Natalie Dormer plays the woman, and most people recognize her. She was in Game of Thrones. And even more widely recognized, she was in the Hunger Games movie. She was the one with the half of her head was shaved, and she was the one who was filming Katniss in her little propaganda team. Her performance seems very phoned in. She seems to just be delivering lines to get her paycheck. It does not feel that Dormer's heart was in this movie, and I can see why. It's a PG-13 movie, and I don't have a problem with PG-13 movies, but I always have a problem with PG-13 horror movies when they really try to be grisly and intense, but they're still going for the PG rating. So there's a lot of jump scares in this movie. It also feels a lot like when J-horror and a lot of the Asian horror movies were starting to get their claws into American tastes back in the early part of the 21st century with movies like The Ring and The Grudge. And then there's this wash of Japanese and Hong Kong-inspired horror movies and remakes. Stuff like One Missed Call and The Eye and, of course, all the sequels to The Ring and The Grudge. But it just doesn't quite work. It's almost like it's like, ooh, it's scary because it's a Japanese version of scary. And it's really not that scary. Yeah, it has some jump scares in it. And that, if that's all you want to do is go to a movie with your date and have her jump in your arms, yeah, it'll work. But as horror movies go, first of all, it's extremely predictable and it's extremely thin. you know where things are going, and there's not much of a plot there. And it tries to be mind-bending and twisty, and I guess it achieves it to a certain degree. Natalie Dormer is... I'd like to see her do more stuff. I don't feel like her heart was in this movie. But her co-star in the film is Taylor Kinney. He's really good looking, but he looks like a TV actor. There's nothing about him that makes him pop. And it's kind of a bland movie. And that's the problem when you get a film that is, I mean, it has some great imagery and it has some great ideas, but it just doesn't quite deliver. And that's sad because I like the fact that that's not found footage and it's something a little bit different than what we've been getting in January, but it's not good enough to really make the grade. So I'm going to say The Forest kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Masked Saint. It's an independent, faith-based movie. And here's the blurb. A former professional wrestler turned pastor dresses up in his old wrestler mask to become a local vigilante.
You've always been a man looking for a second chance.
Remember, the world can only be changed by our actions.
Now, apparently, there's a masked vigilante out there beating people up.
You don't say.
Where in the Bible does it say thou shalt not wrestle, huh?
Not back.
Yeah, you are. You just don't want it.
Thank you, you're a saint.
No, miss. I'm just a man.
This is loosely based on the life of Chris Whaley, who was a preacher who used to be in wrestling. He used to do wrestling. And he quit to become a pastor, and then he started wrestling while he was a pastor. Then he wrote this book called The Masked Saint. And this is based on the novel. So it's sort of this fictionalized account of what he could see his life could have been. It's not just about a pastor who becomes a wrestler. And Chris Whaley was never running around saving people from robbers as a masked wrestler. You know, look, faith-based movies are tough to rate against other movies because there are a lot of trappings in them. They often are very corny and are often very cheesy. Their production value is often not as good as regular full-fledged performances. So when I see a movie like Heaven Is For Real, which I thought was actually a pretty good faith-based movie, I was partly impressed because, with a few exceptions, they delivered a pretty professional-looking production. But a lot of these faith-based movies tend to look more like a Lifetime movie of the week or a Hallmark movie. And oftentimes deals with corny characters and cheesy dialogue and an overbearing message that seems a little too perfect. And look, if you can look past all that, that's great. You know, and you'll like this movie. The thing I don't get is I don't understand what universe this exists in. Because in the film, professional wrestling is a real thing. And by real, I mean it's not choreographed. Don't say it's not real. Never ever say that professional wrestling is not real. I've met enough full-blown like WWE wrestlers and talked to them to know not to say, well, this is fake, because you'll get punched in the face. There's real pain and real athleticism. People are running around lifting each other up, but it's choreographed. These things are planned. You know what's going to happen. They have a script. And so that would be like saying that ballet is not real. Ballet's real, but it's choreographed. You don't just send a bunch of people on stage and have them dance and have something emerge. Wrestling's the same way. You can't do some of these moves on people without their cooperation, or you're going to break somebody's neck. But in this movie, it's like they just send these two guys in a ring and they fight. And then the one who wins, wins. And I'm like, wait, that's not how it works. What universe does this professional wrestling actually exist as like a Rocky movie where you do have two fighters who have to go head to head and they're doing these crazy pile driver moves? Anyways, if you like faith-based movies, but you don't think that the professional wrestling angle has been fully explored, then yeah, you're probably going to like The Masked Saint. But this movie is not really that good. Ultimately, it kind of sucks, just like a lot of movies that try a little too hard.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Revenant and Diablo. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse, Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, rolling in with the movie reviews, continuing the movie reviews. One of the older movies, and I say that a little bit with air quotes, The Revenant came out technically in December sometime. For those who don't remember or know how this works, a lot of big movies that are going for awards, they release them as late in the year as possible so they're fresh in people's mind. If The Revenant had come out in February, people would be like, oh gosh, that was this year, wasn't it? So they try and release them as late as possible. They give them Christmas releases, and that way they can kind of get a buzz and ride this wave. So The Revenant opened in a couple, like four theaters or something like that, a couple weeks ago. And so it's played technically, so it's a 2015 release, but it's getting a wide release this week. And they do that because, as you can know from the previous segment, you have films like The Forest and The Masked Saint that are coming out, and that's all it's got to go up against. That and Star Wars, of course. So The Revenant, it is now available for anybody to see, which makes it kind of a rarity right now because all the other new releases are kind of crappy January ones. So in The Revenant, a fur trader is left for dead in the wilderness and seeks revenge on the man who left him there.
What happened?
We did what we had to do.
He was buried right.
All I had was my boy. And he took him from me, you understand? He's afraid. He knows how far I came to find him.
This is directed by Alejandro Iñárritu, who won the Oscar last year for Birdman. It stars Leonardo DiCaprio as this guy. It's the 1820s. It's way out in the middle of nowhere. This is not like New York in 1820. This is the middle of the wilderness in the 1820s. And he plays a fur trader who their party's attacked by these Native Americans. And they have to try and get their way home. Of course, trying to take as much of their of the furs that they've got on the way. And Tom Hardy plays the bad guy who does him wrong, and it's essentially a revenge movie. Now, it's pretty slow. Probably could have lost about 20, 30 minutes of this movie. It could have been edited down a bit. But I'll tell you a couple things that are fantastic about this movie. First of all, the cinematography is amazing. And it's really interesting watching this and comparing it to, say, The Hateful Eight. Because The Hateful Eight is all about 70 millimeter. It's all about film. It's all about retro presentation where you have these epic scope westerns from the 50s and 60s and 70s that Tarantino was paying homage to. And in this one, Iñárritu shot digital. And it's gorgeous looking. It's probably the most gorgeous looking digital that you're going to see. And a lot of it's using ambient light, which you can do more effectively with digital. So it just is a gorgeous looking movie, and it's worth seeing on the big screen for that, if no other reason. Also, Leonardo DiCaprio does a fantastic job in this movie. He goes through a lot of stuff, and he went through a lot of stuff in the production. I mean, a lot of people have written and heard stories about what he had to go through and what he had to face and the extreme temperature and these extreme conditions. And that makes it a great movie because you get this very visceral feel from Leonardo DiCaprio. And what's interesting is if you look at the best actor field, right now, there's no real front runner. So Leonardo DiCaprio has been nominated for an Oscar probably, you know, I don't know how many times. He always ends up losing. This year, he actually has a chance because there is no one front runner who is probably going to take home Oscar gold. So he actually has a shot at winning best actor for this one. So this is a big movie for him. And I mean, he really gave his all for this movie. Tom Hardy does a great job. He's a little underappreciated in the film. So's Domhnall Gleeson, who's done a lot of stuff in supporting roles this year. So they're not as prevalent in the film and not as noticeable. It is DiCaprio's movie. And yeah, you've got the bear scene in. I was even asked on the radio, did somebody get raped by a bear? I'm like, no, it's a mama bear. She's protecting her cubs. I don't know who started that rumor that it was. No, the bear does not go full on Bill Cosby for Leonardo DiCaprio. He just gets mauled. And getting mauled by a bear is no picnic either. But it is violent. There's a lot of blood. It's not like gratuitous blood. It's not meant to be sensationalized. It's real stuff that could happen if you're mauled by a bear and you're trying to survive in the wilderness. So yeah, this is an intense movie, and it's worth seeing in the theater. So I'm going to say The Revenant rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next one. And that is a smaller film getting a small theatrical run, but mostly on VOD. And that is Diablo. After his wife has been kidnapped by Mexican bandits, a Civil War veteran hunts them down across the West.
They took my wife.
Get out of my house.
They came in the night and they took her. You know where they headed? On the South Trail. Towards Mexico. You be careful. Jackson, you remember me?
Who could forget?
I collect the toll, crusade passage.
Got a toll for everything you got. Maybe even your soul.
The most significant part of this movie is it stars Scott Eastwood. Those who don't know who that is, that's Clint Eastwood's son. And he happens to have been blessed with looking uncannily like his father did at that age. And if you recall back when Clint Eastwood was about 30, he started doing Westerns. He was on TV, but then, of course, he moved into the spaghetti Westerns as he got a little older. And he became extremely well-known as a Western hero. And Scott Eastwood looks amazingly like him at times. And you watch some of the stills from this movie, and you're like, oh my God, that's Blondie from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And at times in the movie, Scott Eastwood will strike a pose and look eerily like his father, and at times even sound like his father. And that's an interesting draw to Diablo. Now, before I continue on Scott Eastwood, let's just talk really quickly about the movie. The movie's a smaller film. It's got some great photography, but it's a relatively small cast, and it's got very limited locations because it takes place either in the wilderness or on homesteads. So it does kind of have a feel of a low-budget Western from the past. It also has a bit of horror movie qualities. Walton Goggins plays a killer in it, and I love Walton Goggins. I thought he was, of all the underappreciated performances in 2015, his in The Hateful Eight got the least amount of love, and I thought he was fantastic in that movie. I thought he held his own up against Kurt Russell and Jennifer Jason Leigh and Samuel L. Jackson. So his role is very creepy and almost horror movie-like, and so it works in that sense. I mean, it's a little bit predictable, but for, you know, just sort of a run-of-the-mill Western that's not meant to be this massive production like Hateful Eight is, it's actually pretty decent. I actually kind of liked the movie. I thought it was pretty good. It's definitely a recommend. The thing is with Scott Eastwood, though, his similarities of looks to his dad are both a huge benefit for him to get a movie like this, but it's also going to be a huge hindrance on him because he's only recognizable when he's almost recognizable as his father. When you strip away him being his dad, he's somewhat generic. His voice is somewhat generic. Clint Eastwood has always had a very distinct voice. Scott Eastwood's voice is very generic. And Scott Eastwood's attractiveness, his look, is very generic. Unless he's posing to look and be shot like his father. And this is going to be a challenge because when you have a famous actor like Kirk Douglas, then he has Michael Douglas. Michael Douglas became his own actor and lived in his roles outside of Kirk Douglas. Same thing with Kiefer Sutherland. I remember when Kiefer Sutherland first showed up on the scene, people were like, oh my God, he looks so much like Donald Sutherland. But Kiefer Sutherland soon got very different roles, and that differentiated him from Donald Sutherland. And that's what I don't think Scott Eastwood quite has. Maybe he hasn't just developed it yet. But that's a challenge when you've got a famous father who's so distinct, and then you try and follow in his footsteps, and the only way he's really going to get note is being a younger version of his dad. And even then, he doesn't quite command the screen the way Clint Eastwood did. Still, with all that said, I enjoyed Diablo. So I have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the reviews this week. Next segment, I'm going to be talking about the most anticipated films for me in 2016. I'll also talk about the box office and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing the show, and I finished with the movie reviews, but let's look ahead to the rest of 2016. We've already looked at the movies that were best and worst in 2015. Now I'm looking ahead to, and these may not be the best or the worst of 2016, but they certainly are the ones that are flying highest on my radar. The fifth most anticipated film for me in 2016 is actually a 1-2 punch. It's two of them. And I've grouped them together for a very specific reason, and that is Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Captain America, Civil War. The reason I put them together is they're both big superhero movies. They're both kind of almost going head-to-head. They're coming out something like 6 weeks apart. And they represent the biggest juxtaposition you're going to see, not just within those Marvel and DC universes, but with each other. I remember reading comic books in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, and especially in the 70s and 80s, there was a little bit of a friendly rival between DC and Marvel. And that was always a lot of fun, because those are the two biggest superhero comic books out there. And they're finally getting to go head-to-head with two very similar movies, where you've got two big characters. In, obviously, Dawn of Justice, you got Superman and Batman duking it out. And in Captain America Civil War, you essentially have the line drawn between Iron Man and Captain America. This is also kind of significant for Captain America because it's going to be a bona fide Iron Man movie, because Iron Man's certainly in it. And outside of the Avengers, Iron Man's always had his own movies. So it really, I think, enriches the universe, and I'm looking forward to it. Plus, it's directed by the guys who did The Winter Soldier. And then Batman vs. Superman, I'm not going to belabor a lot of the points I've made before. I'm skeptical of that one, but who knows? It might be awesome. So I'll be curious to see, and I think that this is going to be the defining spring that shows where each of these movie franchises is headed. The number four most anticipated movie of the year for me is The Jungle Book. I've loved the cartoon from the 60s, which was, I think, the last movie that Walt Disney actually had a hand in before he died. So this is a live action, but also CGI character movie, and it's directed by Jon Favreau, who I generally love his stuff. So I'm really looking forward to this one. I think it's going to be an interesting adaptation. In terms of the big sort of live action adaptations that Disney's done, like Maleficent or Cinderella, this is the one I think that has the greatest potential and can be the most outside of the box and the most significant and the most worthwhile to actually bring to a live action version. Number three most anticipated film is Hail Caesar. This is flying very low on a lot of people's radar right now, and I think it comes out in March. This is directed by the Coen brothers, and in general, I love the Coen brothers. There have been movies they've done that I don't think were as good. Stuff like Burn After Reading was clever and funny, but it wasn't their best work. Or movies like Serious Man, which I know a lot of people like that one. It got nominated for an Oscar, but that one wasn't a big deal for me. And yeah, as much as I like True Grit, it really didn't feel like that quirky, weird Coen brothers movie. I love the Coen brothers for movies like Fargo and Raising Arizona, and I thought No Country for Old Men, while it was very different and very grim for them, was a fantastic movie. And Inside Llewyn Davis, which they did a couple years ago, is a great movie, but I'm not into folk music, so there's a certain charm that it had that was kind of lost on me. Hail Caesar looks like it's going to be a really neat look at old school Hollywood in a way that only the Coen brothers are going to be able to do. The second most anticipated movie I have is Kubo and the Two Strings. I know almost nothing about this movie. I did see a trailer for it between Christmas and New Year's when I took my mom to go see Star Wars in the IMAX. And this thing looks incredible. It's Laika, and pretty much Laika, although they've only had, what, three movies? What, Coraline, Paranorman, and The Box Trolls? Each one of those has made my top 10 list. I don't just have a history of liking the Laika movies. I love the Laika movies, and they consistently not just make my top 10 list, but they're usually in the top three. So I'm very much looking forward to Kubo and the Two Strings, simply because stop motion is a dying art, and we need production companies like Laika or Aardman to keep those things up so that it is still a charming, wonderful artistry that doesn't get lost. Same thing with Tim Burton. Tim Burton does great stuff with stop motion, and you can say what you want to about Tim Burton, but as long as he keeps that up and we keep having great stop motion movies, I'm all for it. But of course, the number one anticipated film right now for me is Star Wars Rogue One. I'm a little bit nervous because I don't know what to expect from this one. I don't know how hands-on Disney has been with this one, considering how hands-on they were with Episode 7. Disney's doing the Marvel thing. I just hope that they don't let the director go too far with Rogue One and trying to make a not Star Wars movie. But I'm looking forward to it because I just love the idea of having an anthology series of movies in the Star Wars universe. I can't wait for this one. And it's next Christmas. Don't worry, it's not going to be nearly as huge or as under wraps as Episode 7 was. This is going to be treated probably a little bit more like a Marvel movie, something like Ant-Man was. The other anticipated films for this year that I'm looking forward to, Zoolander 2, Zootopia I talked about earlier, X-Men Apocalypse, Independence Day Resurgence, Doctor Strange, I'm curious to see where that goes, and then Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quick about the box office. Of course, Star Wars won again last weekend. What's interesting about Star Wars winning last weekend, which is its third weekend of release, it made $90 million in its third weekend. There's only about 50 movies that have made $90 million or more on any weekend, let alone the third weekend. There are only three movies that have made more than $90 million in its second weekend. One of them, of course, being Star Wars, but Jurassic World and Marvel's Avengers both made over $100 million. But then the next one is Avengers Age of Ultron made $78 million its second weekend. That's a massive amount for a third weekend, $90 million. That's unheard of. I said $75 million. It bested that by $15 million. Now, this weekend, I think you're going to start seeing a slowdown simply because we're back to school. We're back to January. A lot of the demand has burned off. But I still think you're good for another $40 to $50 million for Star Wars this weekend. It's going to beat The Revenant, although The Revenant is going to do well. I think The Revenant's going to do better than they expect. I wouldn't be surprised if you get $30 million for The Revenant this weekend. The Forest, I think, is also going to do extremely well. I think at least $25 or $30 million for The Forest. I went to go see that on Thursday night, and it was pretty packed. Now, granted, it was a 7 o'clock show, and it was a relatively small theater, but this is the kind of thing that, like I said, teenagers and 20-somethings are going to be driving that audience. So yeah, Star Wars is still going to win $45 million. This might be its last weekend, though, as the head of the box office. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. There's actually a really nice slate of movies coming out this week. Well, let me rephrase that. Not a nice slate. There's a large slate. Now, there's some great stuff coming out this week. Sicario is coming out this week, and that was my favorite movie of 2015. Fantastic film about the drug war down in the southern states by our own border. No easy answers, no easy solutions. An authority procedural film shot like a horror movie. It felt a lot like Silence of the Lambs as a drug cartel movie. Also, Infinitely Polar Bear, which also was in my top five of 2015, that's getting a release. Like I said, that one's flying way under the radar. Not a whole lot of people remember that. I thought it was a charming, wonderful movie. Examine mental illness in a very kind and understanding way without being judgmental. Then we start dialing back with The Walk, which, you know, The Walk was an okay movie. The problem with The Walk on home video is I don't think it's going to be nearly as impressive. This was a movie, if you missed it in IMAX 3D, you missed the movie. Even on a 3D presentation at home on a 70-inch television, you're not going to get the immersive vertigo feel that you got from seeing it in the IMAX. So I think this one, while it's an interesting movie, it is not the same if it's an IMAX. Now, there's a bunch of horror films that are coming out. One of them is Deathgasm, which is a New Zealand death metal horror movie. Really bizarre and bonkers. Sort of like an Evil Dead with New Zealand death metal. This is worth seeing, especially if you want something different. But it's out there, so don't necessarily show it to your mom unless she's got some pretty extreme tattoos. Also on the horror movie front, we've got The Green Inferno, which is not a good movie, but it's kind of worth seeing for the general discussion that comes around it. There's also The Visit, which is M. Night Shyamalan's movie. Found footage, and that's what actually ruins it. Otherwise, it could have been a really clever film. And then there's a couple other ones to mention. Love, which is Gaspar Noé's mildly pornographic movie or completely pornographic movie about a guy, I guess, just having sex with whatever he can. It has hardcore sex in it. So if you want to see it, it was in 3D. I never saw it. I had a chance to see it in 3D, but I forget why I didn't go see it. And then True Detective Season 2 is available on DVD and Blu-ray. That is it. I need to go for a week and catch up on movies because next week I would be talking about Ride Along 2, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, and Norm of the North. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.